what I learned from doing this is these people who run these programs in Silicon Valley know who is on their platform. It's really actually quite frightening because the people at Google knew who I was, and they, turns out, they like Lego and they like Lego photography. And because they did, I was picked out of the crowd and put on a pedestal and promoted.
You're listening to the Toy Photographers Podcast, the official podcast of toyphotographers.com. I'm James Garcia, and on this show, I talk to photographers around the world who are turning Lego, action figures, miniatures, custom creations, and more into amazing works of art. On this week's show, I talk to Seattle-based photographer Shelley Corbett. Shelley's been at the forefront of the community for years, thanks to her involvement in founding creative spaces like Brick Central, Stuck in Plastic, and of course, toyphotographers.com. Shelley's photography journey began over 20 years ago, photographing nude women underwater. How did that eventually lead to her becoming one of the world's most popular Lego and toy photographers, with over 150,000 followers across social media? Let's find out. Before we get started, I would like to apologize for a couple of rough spots in the audio later on in the episode. It's not too bad, but there was some construction going on Shelley's end, so you'll hear the occasional hammering or sawing in the background. Again, I apologize, it's not a deal breaker, but I wanted to give you guys a heads up before the start of the show. How did you first get into photography? Let's start there.
Oh, photography. I got into photography in my early 20s. In the third year of college, I wanted to be a graphic designer, and I got really sick and missed the deadline to get into the program. And they said, well, you know, what you could do over the summer is take a photography class, and in so doing, you would be a leg up next in the following year when I was back in the design program. And I ended up taking a class and loved it and said, and just stayed. So I came at it late in life. I know so many people get into it in high school. That was not me. And I just sort of stuck with it.
How did you go from doing the underwater photography and, you know, photographing people to photographing minifigures and plastic people?
Yeah, I did underwater photography for almost 20 years. I just,
oh, wow.
Why anyone would shoot naked women underwater for 20 years is beyond me, but I did. And when you do something for that long, it's not surprising that one would hit burnout in a big way. And I did. I completely just lost my love for every aspect of photography. Because shooting women underwater was a huge amount of work. Just an entire van full of props, loading them into a pool, setting up for an hour, shooting for 2 hours, unloading everything. But when you unload it, you're taking like gallons and gallons of water with you, and then bringing it all home, getting it all dry, packed away. I did it for years, and I lost my love. And it took me about 5 years to recover from that. I had a kid, and in that time, and I just wasn't really photographing anything. And then I was obviously photographing my kids. Who doesn't photograph their infant? It's like, so I kind of got a little bit back into photography by photographing my kids. And then people kept poking at me and like, you should really get on Instagram. You should really get on Instagram. And it was back in the early days of IG when people were really still concerned about rights and maintaining control of their photography and not giving it away, because it was sort of on the tail end of that. And so I didn't jump on Instagram in the early days. And then I ended up getting gifted some collectible minifigure series one for Christmas. And in January, my first post on Instagram was the crash test dummy. And it's just the world's worst photo. And then from there, I just sort of like messed around with Instagram like everybody else does. I did food. I did, you know, macro shots of leaves and flowers and, you know, just random crap. And then I discovered the toy photography community through Lego. And there you go. Kind of the rest is history.
It's funny you talked about just the work that went into the underwater stuff. I freak out when I just have to shoot like a minifigure in the rain. So I can't imagine the kind of work and planning and, like you said, the gallons of water that you have to deal with when you're doing underwater stuff. So I don't blame you at all for getting burned out on that.
I'm so burned out still from all that equipment that even now, if I leave the house with one bin of minifigs, I've upped my game a little bit. I now have a bounce card and a really good video light that I take with me for when I don't have the lighting I want. But I will never touch a tripod again. And it's just, and I won't take a bunch of lights with me. I'm so minimal. If maybe sometimes I'll take an extra lens if I know I'm going to have some bigger figures with me. But I'm like, I'm so minimal on my photography equipment. I'm just like, ah.
How long did it kind of take you to figure that kind of stuff out? Were you just like, I'm so tired of equipment, I don't want it from the beginning? Or did you kind of ease into that?
It's really funny. I don't know. I think I just resisted. I just don't ever want to do that again. And I didn't really understand where it was coming from, but it's writing about photography and the creative process for the last, I think I'm on coming up this January, it'll be 4 years now, has really helped me to understand where I am and how I got there, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. Because I have to look at every single you know, aspect of the work in trying to find different topics every week. It's like, what am I going to write about? What am I going to write about? And then so I'm always looking at my own creative process to look at that, and it's made me find the connections between the underwater and the minifigs. And there's actually a lot. It's actually really kind of shocking when I think about it, that there's so much overlap. But you'd have to know me, and you'd have to know both ways I work. But they're both about voyeurism, so much about them, about water. They're both about my own personal journey. They're each telling stories. Some are my stories. Some are my stories overlapped on the subject. But it's all there. It's kind of fun.
I love that you brand your photography The Secret Life of Toys. Can you talk a little bit about what that means for you and the decision behind that?
I'm an observer. I like to observe what's going on in the world. Always one step removed, which is not really great when interpersonal relations, but I tend to like to just sort of be a student of the human condition, and watching people interact underwater and how they interact with each other or themselves, and how that as a reflection of me is no different than me watching the minifigures interact with their environment. And I know that seems really kind of bizarre, but they tell their stories. They when you get down on the macro world and you're shooting with a really short depth of field, you're not of this world. You're in some place that's just next to our world. And if you start thinking about the toys being alive and they're running around in their swamps or on their deserts or having their adventures or on their own quest, I mean, it's not... I'm watching them. Oh man, that doesn't make any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. I think that approach works super well for your photography, and it's something that I see one of your shots and I know immediately, oh, that's a Shelley shot.
I love the swirl of the colors when you shoot a short depth of field. I just love how the colors in the background swirl together, and you get this beautiful bouquet. And if you've got the glinter of the light, and you get these big circles of light, and you get this sparkle, and you get this magic, and it's no different than underwater when the fabric was slow shutter speed and the fabric is swooshing around and making these interesting color swashes, and you've got these different layers, and you sometimes the figure is seen, sometimes it's not, and in the Lego world it's the same way. And then I start looking at paintings and I'm thinking, maybe I should just be a painter.
Yeah, so let's touch on that a little bit, because you have recently been experimenting with taking your toy photography and bringing it into a more 3D medium or more tactile medium. Can you talk a little bit about that? What has kind of driven you to do that, and what exactly is that process?
Me going into a more hands-on, approach to my photography is it comes from two different places. One is I started out in the world of film when you would go into the dark room and when you created photographs, there was always the technical aspect of your lens and your f-stop and your shutter speed and capturing the image and pre-visualization. That was the one side of it, the technical side. But then the other side was you're in the dark room, and sure, you have to know what your paper is and what your developer is and what your film is and how that all is going to coincide to create this final image. But you're in the dark room and you're exposing, and you can use your hands to adjust the light, and you can dodge and burn when those actually meant something. They weren't just tools in Photoshop, but you would like actually dodge and burn your print, and you would stick it in the developer, and you would like, it would emerge, and it was this very hands-on process. And then we went to digital, and I was like, but it's all on a computer, and I'm just sitting here, and I just like, there was no, it was a wall between me and the work. So fast forward X amount of years, and I've always sold my work. It's always been a part of who I am, is selling the underwater work, and now the toy photography at arts and crafts shows or at galleries or whatever the venue might be. It's always been a part of how I've made my living. So now I'm like, but photography isn't a medium that you can just put a photo on a wall and expect to get some money from it, because everybody can take a photo. Anybody can print a photo. And if you're going to print a photo and put it on your wall, more than likely you're going to put your own photo. You're not going to put someone else's photo. Mm-hmm. So how am I as an artist going to thread the needle of the marketplace to create an object that is interesting enough that will inspire people to actually want to put it on their wall? So that's where, and I've been messing around with this in so many different ways the last few years. And I finally stumbled across encaustic medium, which is beeswax and Damar resin. And you literally mount your photo and you cover it in wax and you melt it into the paper. And then I start adding things to it. And it's a lot of fun. It gets me in my studio. It's very hands-on. It's very relaxing. I'm creating, each piece is unique, and I'm able to take these painterly aspects of the photo and bring more of that out with the materials I'm adding into the wax. And it's they're beautiful. I love them. And I love how when people walk up to them, they don't see them as photos. They see them as something else.
You've got your work in a few different places, and you've got some exhibitions coming up. Can you plug some of those and then talk about how you first got into that gallery scene?
I've been really, really lucky, and I'm blessed by having a lot of connections left over from the underwater work. So several years ago, somebody I knew, the Brian Ono Gallery, Brian Ono contacted me and he said, oh, hey, I'm starting a gallery again. I want to show your underwater work. I'm like, went down, I'm like, yeah, Brian, this is great. You know, thank you so much for the opportunity, but I don't do underwater anymore. I do this. And he's like, whoa, okay. But he's open. He was super open to it. And from that, I was able to bring in two other artists, European artists, and we did a toy photography Lego specific show, and we did a couple of those. And those were a lot of fun. And it taught me a lot about what the market would bear now. And that's why the search around for this alternative medium and led me to the encaustic. And it took me about a year and a half of just playing around, taking some classes and figuring out my style. And then I had some work, and it's like, every artist knows if you want to get anything done, you need deadlines. It's impossible to just sit around and go, oh yeah, I'm going to create this work. I have no deadlines. And you go to a movie or you read a book or you watch a TV show or you hang out with your kids. You do anything in the world except actually create art. But then you get a deadline. It's like, whoa, I got to get in the studio. So I'm a real fan of deadlines, self-imposed. So I started poking around and I started local. I said, okay, what's in my neighborhood where there's a cute little coffee shop a few blocks from my house? And I'm like, went up to them and say, hey, how do I get to hang on your wall? And they said, contact this person. And I did. And they said, oh, great. And then that led to another one, and then that led to another one, which led to another one. And then I'm reading my neighborhood blog, and I saw someone say, hey, I've got my work up at this place down in Pike Place Market called Local Color. And I'm like, oh, Local Color. I did some little internet research, found out how to apply to that gallery, that little cafe. So it's just been building, and just it's part of that sitting on the sidelines and watching and looking and seeing what is going out there, what are the opportunities, and searching them out. So in December and January, it's at Local Color at the Pike Place Market. And then next spring, we haven't set a date yet, but it'll be at another little coffee shop near Green Lake at Cafe Lulu, which will be smaller pieces, which I'm excited about, create some smaller pieces. And so those are my coffee shop shows. And then my neighborhood, I have a toy store a couple blocks from my house, and they have the worst birthday cards. Every time I go up there and I'm buying a present, they have the worst cards. So I'm like, Michaela, who is in charge of the Lego at the store, I'm like, do you mind if I make you some cards? Would you buy some if I made you some greeting cards? And she's like, sure, yeah, make us some greeting cards. So I made her some greeting cards, and I sold them a bunch of greeting cards, and now they're up there. So I'm finding little opportunities in my neighborhood. I guess after so many years, and we got one more to plug, so many years of being on the internet and trying to be global, I just, like, this last year, I just really pulled back and said, I'm tired of trying to be global and make a global reach. What can I do? Where can I get my work locally? Instagram is still good, because I ran into a gentleman named Matthew Carden several years ago. And one thing I learned about Instagram a long time ago is that people who are truly doing interesting work are not on Instagram. The people who are actually out doing stuff, creating art, getting it into the gallery, selling it, whatever it is that they're doing, they don't have time for Instagram. So I came across Matthew a few years ago, and he does HO photography, toys with food. And he's always posting photos of, you know, all sorts of crazy things. And we connected and didn't quite connect in person this past June at the San Francisco Toy Photo Safari, but he put together a toy art show at a gallery in LA called the Bruce Lurie Gallery. And he was gracious enough to invite me to be part of that. And that is open and will be, and the work is up. I'm one of 15 artists, both 3D and 2D. And there's just the most amazing art in that gallery. I mean, really covers the gamut. I'm just so amazed that I'm even in the gallery with these people. And so that's cool. And that's up through December. And then they're going to reboot the show for December and January with a more of a Star Wars bent of all toy photography. So that's if you're in LA, stop by the Bruce Lurie Gallery. Just definitely see the range of some really interesting toy photography and toy art. I shouldn't say it's not toy photography, toy art, because there's several painters, and there's this really awesome quilting person who's doing felt toys that were just fabulous. And then there was a couple photographers, and then this one guy who was doing these 5-layer acetate, like, comic book covers that were just layered, that were just off the chart. So there you go.
What do you kind of think I don't want to call it a resurgence, but just kind of a spark in popularity of toys, and why do you think that is prevalent nowadays? Do you think it's always been around and we just didn't have social media to kind of put a spotlight on it? Do you think that toys and toy photography and toy art in general are just becoming more popular? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think it's definitely two things. Is one, we're just more aware of it. And two, it's becoming more socially acceptable. I think I wrote about this a couple years ago, that there was just a whole heck of a lot of toy art out there if you look for it, especially if you move outside of the photography realm. I've known some people who've done some beautiful paintings of imaginary, you know, that first toy you have that's like your teddy bear, that's like the most important teddy bear you've ever had, or whatever, a duck or whatever you have. This gentleman who I followed for years as a photographer moved into painting, and he was doing these imaginary stuffed animals that were just, they're so beautiful. I think I have a very small one in my house somewhere that I bought. And then as I was at another craft show, and this guy was taking all these toys that he'd gotten at Goodwill and thrifting, and he had glued them all together in these huge monster 3D sculptures of all these toys. And then he just painted them all these monochromatic colors. and they were amazing. And so I really think it was just, here I am at this show and I'm walking around, and I swear 10% of the booths at the show were all toy imagery. So I think if you start to look for it, you will see it. It's everywhere. I even know several people who are doing jewelry out of toys, and that seems to be pretty prevalent. I would say it's our national extended adolescence.
I like that.
It is just sort of, it's rearing itself in our toys. And they're just so prevalent. I mean, everything from the McDonald's giveaways to the merchandising that started with George Lucas with his Star Wars. I mean, wasn't he the first movie to really embrace merchandising? And that was all toy related. And now we just have every movie now has some sort of merchandising tie-in, and that's all toys.
I know you're probably too humble to admit, but I would say that you're probably one of the most influential toy photographers out there right now. You helped create Brick Central, one of the most popular toy photography Instagram accounts. You helped create Stuck in Plastic, and then now you're on Toy Photographers. I know that you said you discovered the toy community at one point, and that kind of drove you to start experimenting with it. What kind of drove you to become a part of the community, and not just a part of it, but an influencer in the community and bringing people together?
All these things that I've been involved in were never my idea. I am not an idea person. I'm an implementer. So Brick Central was the brainchild of Franco, who goes by LL World. Goes by LL World now. So it's Franco and CJ, who's Harlequin. Harlequin, I think, is probably the most well-known female toy photographer, one of them anyway, out there, certainly in Lego. And it was their idea. And they came to me and said, hey, we're putting together this idea of, and this was at the time when there was there were several toy communities, but they never acknowledged Lego. I think Lego figures are the poor stepchild of the toy photography community. A lot of the larger sort of toy feeds, they're more into their 6-inch and 12-inch figures and even larger, because they love all the articulation and they like the realism of them. And they look at the Lego and they're just like, meh,
yeah,
child's toy or something. So there's not a lot of respect, and that's still the same now, which is funny. So we weren't getting the toy photographers, Lego photographers, were not getting any love from the other sites. So we said, all right, they said, let's come up with our own site. And they asked me, and I'm like, well, you guys are from New Zealand and Australia. I need somebody in my time zone. So I had asked my friend Weeman, and so we were the, and he was in Texas at the time. So we were the North American contingent, and they were the Southern Hemisphere contingent. And the four of us started it. We had a great thing. So CJ was the sort of the more technical person, and would come up with the technical stuff and help with the judging, and then Franco would do his comics and be our humor, and Weeman would do he would always do the contests and do the photos for the contests and announce them and the winners. And then I was that, okay, this is social media. No one's going to care about it unless we are blogging every single day. We need to have a post every single day. And that's what I did. I just would surf the community and post every single day, because I'm part of that 20 years of doing underwater. I'm sort of a bulldog that way, and it really carries over into everything else. So that was what I did. And then I was approached, after a year doing that, I was approached by Boris, who goes by Me Too on Instagram. And he's like, hey, I want to start this blog about toy photography. You want to do this with me? You want to be my partner? I'm like, sure, let's do this thing. And we did. And Boris works a full-time job, and he's a very busy guy. So once again, I'm like, okay, sure, I'll do both. I'll do Brick Central and Stuck in Plastic for an entire year at the same time. I'll never do that again. And then we just said that. So then I eased out of Brick Central and really focused on Stuck in Plastic. And then we had the shows, and I met my heroes, which really, I look back at those blog posts and I'm talking about meeting Vesa for the first time. Even before I knew about toy photography, I'd seen his snow photos and I was just so blown away by them. And then to suddenly be talking to him via Google Hangouts and meeting him, and he stayed at my house, I'm like, what? Those were heady days, I gotta say. That was an amazing week. Still goes down as an amazing week in my life.
Yeah, I bet. I could see why, you know. I kind of felt that way when I met you, to be honest, at the Seattle Toy Photo Safari in 2016, because when I got into toy photography 4 years ago now, Stuck in Plastic was kind of the first thing I latched onto, and I read all of your guys' blog posts, and I loved your photos and Vesa and Mike and I remember thinking, oh man, I want to be part of this community somehow. I someday it'd be so cool to like meet Shelly and be able to write for her and stuff. So I'm really glad that eventually happened for me. And I think it's really cool that you've had a similar experience, you know, with Vesa. And that's one thing that's really cool about the toy photography community is how there are those big name people and they are accessible in a way.
Oh, James, you're so sweet. I was just so glad that you came to the meetup in Seattle. That was just so much fun. And it was so great to meet you. And I'm thinking back, I'm like, we should have shot more together. We should have like hung out. But that was the year we were doing the video. And I was just like, oh, just going in so many different directions. It was really hard for me to focus. So I've set my sights lower. And it is a really, you're right, it's a really amazing community. I had an opportunity thrown into my lap, another one that I'm not sure where it's going yet, but I was contacted by somebody who wants to represent the work. And I had two people in the community both poke at me the next day going, hey, did he contact you? You really don't want to mess this one up. Just say yes. And I'm like, you guys are so sweet, because it's everyone does watch out for each other, and not only looking out for opportunities for each other, but they're open with ideas. And if you have a question, they'll almost always answer you, and your heroes are accessible. Like if you wanted to talk to Vesa about snow, he'd like, sure, no problem. I mean, he's not going to give you every dirty secret he might have, but he's certainly going to be encouraging, and he's going to point you in the right direction and let you go figure it out yourself. But yeah, that's what I love about the community. And that's why I'm more than happy to support it and nurture it, because it's worthy of nurturing. There's a bunch of really awesome people in there.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk a little bit about how toy photographers came about. You were doing Stuck in Plastic for a while, and then you and Brett Wilson split off and started a new blog and did your own thing, which I'm sure was intimidating and exciting all at the same time. How did you come to that decision, and why did you want to do that?
The Stuck in Plastic was set up as a collective, an arts collective. And when you're an arts collective, you need to have a manifesto, and you need to have a reason for being there. And the whole goal is to get the work out and have it seen and presented in a public fashion. And while I do that individually, I was tired of trying to do that for the group. And the group was stuck. It was stuck. Stuck in Plastic was stuck. And I'm more community-based person. I was really, really unhappy at Stuck in Plastic. And I just like something had to give. So I really enjoy blogging. I really enjoy that aspect of writing. And I just needed a change of pace. And with the help of Christina, who helped me set up the new blog, and Brett was like, if you're going, I'm going. And we're like, okay, let's just go do this and we'll see what happens. And we brought some people on, and it's just this really wonderful community of writers. And now we have the community attached to it with G+, which Tony, who is an Australian photographer, he sort of like resurrected from the dead, and we've grown it into this wonderful community of about 70 active photographers. I mean, there's like 4,000 people in the community, but the number of people who are active are obviously just a fraction of that. And it's just a lovely little corner of the universe that is just, it's like going to Cheers and going to a bar where everyone knows your name. You go into the little community and the little chat rooms and everyone's like, hey, good to see you. Love your work. Love what you're doing. This is really funny. It's nice.
I love what you guys have created, especially you mentioned G+, the Google Plus community. I want to touch on that a little bit because you've got a really great relationship with Google Plus that I see growing, and you've really embraced that platform. And I've noticed that you're definitely you have 133,000 followers on your personal collection of toy photography, which is huge. And I feel like G+ is the redheaded stepchild of the social media world. People think of Facebook and Instagram before they think of G+. Obviously the connection to Tony, but what else kind of drove you to G+, and why do you love that platform so much?
Just funny. One thing I really liked about Stuck in Plastic was Boris, really excellent head for business, really had a good handle, and he saw the blogging platform and he saw the potential, and he laid it all out. He wrote this great diagram of everything that he wanted to accomplish with Stuck in Plastic, and he gave it to me. I said, fine, and I went and implemented all of that in within a year. And then I came back the next year and said, all right, where's my new plan? I need a new plan. And part of that was starting of G+, because we wanted to be on all the different platforms, and he started the G+ community, and made these different rooms that you could post in and get advice from. And it went really well for like about 4 or 5 months, and then it just sort of fell off, because as you know, in social media, people only have so much time in their lives, and people will choose one or two that they focus on, and the rest of them are like just sort of out there. And it sort of died. And then when I was breaking up with Stuck in Plastic, this was when Tony was starting to get excited about G+, and he'd always been on G+, and he started posting in the community. And I realized, there's a lot of potential here that we haven't even begun to take advantage of. So I got it in the divorce. It was great. I love the community, and it was probably the best decision I made, was taking it. So Boris, one of his things he wanted is us to be on G+, and we had this joke. It was a bet. He took Facebook and I took G+, and we're going to see who could get the most subscribers to our community, in the case of Facebook likes, and for me, subscribers, to like our communities, who would win first. Okay, obviously he won with Facebook, hands down, no problem. But I liked G+. I liked the open space of it. I liked the emptiness of it. I liked the fact that nobody I knew was on the platform. So I just stuck out. I stuck around over there, and I made some inroads. I figured out who the players were, because it's a small enough community of active participants that you can really see who is connected with the G+. And I was there on the platform when they did the switch over to communities, and they wanted everyone to move into collections. So I'm like, okay, fine, I'll make collections out of my photography. So I made a couple of collections, and what I learned from doing this is these people who run these programs in Silicon Valley know who is on their platform. It's really actually quite frightening. Because the people at Google knew who I was, and they turns out they liked Lego, and they liked Lego photography, and because they did, I was picked out of the crowd and put on a pedestal and promoted. There you go. That's how I got 135,000 followers over there, and why I only have 60 on Instagram, because on Instagram, I'm not one of the people that they want to promote, but on G+, I am. And that's the difference in social media. That's why people going after likes and followers, I'm just looking at it and going, why? It's a fool's errand. If somebody in Silicon Valley doesn't know who you are, forget it.
I think it's funny that, yeah, maybe in terms of just regular likes, Boris won Facebook, but I think that in terms of creating something really meaningful, you definitely won on the Google Plus front.
Yeah, the Google people are just really sweet. When we went to San Francisco, they hosted us at Google headquarters and feted us with pizza and beer. And they're very, very nice. And they made us all little custom G+ minifigs, which I thought was just awesome, because now we all have little G+ t-shirts for our minifigs. And they're behind the platform and they're promoting the community and not just individuals, but the community as a whole. And whenever they do they'll do periodic, you know, weekends like around Earth Day or around Halloween or some other event. And they'll almost always pick somebody out of our community to push their photo. And then recently, I think Jason, who's one of the moderators in the community, he was one of the featured artists. And whenever they do that, that gets pushed out not only on G+, but on Twitter as well. So they really, they stand behind the community as an entire community. I look at it as like, you have to choose your corporate overlords.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're doing. You're choosing, all right, so do you want to be Mark Zuckerberg as your corporate overlord, who is really more interested in fame and fortune and politics and sucking up to whatever starlet is the hip person of the day? Or do you want to go with these G+ people who, yeah, they're probably just a little sketchy around the edges like these other guys are, but at least they know we exist. I'm like, yeah, I kind of go with G+.
Yeah. I like that attitude because I think it's inevitable that you have to pick one or the other in today's day and age. If you want to get noticed or if you want to get your work out there, social media is a really important tool.
Yeah, and the other thing is that this is when I went to my Seattle Brick Convention, there was a person who was talking, did the keynote speaker, which I really enjoyed. He was talking about adult fans of Lego. And how that in the entire pie of all Lego sales, adult fans of Lego only purchase 5% of the total sets that Lego sells. That's only 5. That's 95% of the people who are into Lego do not think of themselves as adult fans of Lego.
Hmm.
Now, if you're a Lego photographer and you want to get your work out there, I think you have to think of it the same way. Is if you want your work out there, do you want to only get it out there to toy photographers, or do you want your work to be seen by the other 95% of people who are just into social media or just into photography? And that's what G+ is. When you're on Instagram, you're only going to connect with toy photographers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on a platform like G+, which has only a handful of toy photographers on there, you're going to connect with a bunch of people who think that you are the most amazing thing in the entire world because they've never seen what you're doing before. I mean, I have fans in India, in South America, and in Russia that I never would have connected with if I had been on just only showing my work on Instagram. And I'm about getting the work out there for everybody, not just for the select few who are into it themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Or the select few that follow, you know, the various toy photography hashtags on Instagram or something.
Yeah.
I love that even though Google+ might not be the most popular social network, I love that Google, as, you know, one of the most popular and most successful companies in the world, supports the platform regardless. And then they're not just like, well, this isn't as popular as Facebook, let's get rid of it.
Well, it's fun in the community when I'm seeing people who work at Google who are the people behind the platform who are doing the mechanics, who are posting it in our community.
Yeah, you would never see Mark Zuckerberg share one of our pictures, you know?
No, but the guy who's keeping Google going, keeping the G+ platform, you know, up and going and in charge of that, he's like posting his toy photos in our community. I'm like, yeah, Leo, you're so cute.
We've kind of touched on the meetups that we do, the photo safaris. Can you talk about why you think that's important and what that overall experience has been, actually meeting people in person?
I think it's really important to meet people in person. So back in the early days on Instagram, when it was a lot, the toy community was a lot smaller, there was this tag that went around for a while that was show yourself, show who you are. It was the photographer behind the toys or something. And people were posting photos of themselves with a couple photos, personal photos, like photos of their kids, photos of, you know, themselves at work or with their girlfriends or whatever. And it was, and I was amazed because I had this preconceived notion of who these people were. They were like all teenagers, they're all 20-something guys. And what I saw was older people with families, guys who were just getting married, and a lot of women, just it was eye-opening as to the variety of people who were in this community. And it was super cool. And one of the people that I ran into on there was this guy, Dinosaur. His name is John. And he was like, and he was talking to this guy who went by Brick Sailboat, Paul. And they're like, hey, dude, you're in Seattle. I'm in Seattle. I'm like, whoa, guys, I'm in Seattle too. And we're like, oh, that's so cool. Let's meet up for beers. And So I'm like in Ballard, just like hipster zone in Seattle, meeting up with these two guys, both of them quite a bit younger than I am. And we're all sitting around this table having beers, talking toys. And it was a ton of fun. And we started shooting together and we expanded our little group. We had really an awesome time. And then Paul decided to up and move and leave Seattle. And we were devastated because we really enjoyed shooting together. Mm-hmm. And so we decided, all right, let's get together. Let's find a place. And it was Nick. So Weeman, myself, John and Paul were going to meet in Las Vegas. And we're like, all right, if we're going to do that, we might as well just invite everybody else because, you know, the four of us are going to meet up. So we might as well invite the world. So we invited everybody. And so about, I think, six other photographers came. I think there might have been 12 of us total. I'd have to go look at the numbers. Man, we had the best time. And it was like, we need to do this more often. Let's do this every year. Okay, let's do this every year. And then that's how it started. So that's when Boris wanted to do it in Sweden. So he did it in Sweden where he lives. And that was the second one. And then we did Seattle. And now since Second Plastic gets its own group, they do their own European ones. And then I just figure I'm just going to stick with America.
Yeah, there's enough photographers here that you know, we could get a good group of people together.
Yeah, but it's really part of that what we're talking about, which is this podcast, which is getting to know the photographers. And that's what that hashtag was all about, was getting to know the photographers behind the photos. And then from that, you like, oh, well, this guy is in LA. Well, I'm in LA. I should reach out. We should get together. And it's like getting to know people. And it's a whole lot more fun when you're out with your friends photographing and shooting the breeze and swapping toys and helping each other with difficult shots. It's just fun. It's a nice change of pace from doing it all by yourself.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. When I did I've only been to one, the Seattle one, and I had the same kind of thing where you meet somebody and you go, oh, I thought you were a dude, or, you know, oh, you're older than I pictured, or, you know, just meeting those people face to face is really jarring at first, but then getting to know them as a person and not just as an Instagram handle was really cool. You mentioned that we're doing them every year. I know that we're planning the next one. Can you talk about that at all or tease that at all? What's coming up?
I put out a questionnaire a couple months ago and everyone was all over the map. It was like LA, Seattle, Portland, spring, fall, summer, and I'm like, oh, I can't make a decision. So now I'm like actually throwing up my hands completely, throwing out all those other dates. And since it's my party, I've decided we're just going to do it in Portland and Cannon Beach or Memorial Day weekend and call it done. And people will come or they won't. Mm-hmm. And we'll lose some people and we'll gain others, and it's going to be okay. And this one I want to make a little homier. So I'm thinking of renting a large house and having just everyone, you know, combine meals and share meals, because that seems to be what people really remember the most is, like, in San Francisco, we all ended up having lunch at this one restaurant, and it was this long table, and there was like 20 of us there, and we all got our toys out, and we're playing with them as we're waiting for our food, and then we started doing the photo exchange, and it was just the funniest 2 hours, and it's those sorts of experiences I want to foster, and mm-hmm. I'm hoping that maybe if we do a group house, that if the weather is bad, we could all hang out in the house and do indoor photos, and if it's a nice day, then we'll go out to the beach or go into the woods or something. So that's the idea.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about that. And yeah, one of my favorite memories from the Seattle one is same kind of thing where we ate lunch one day. It's when we were downtown near the Space Needle and we ate lunch and we were all gathered at this big table, and there were people, you know, there were like T-Rexes and minifigures and action figures on the table, and people were eating cheeseburgers and taking pictures. And I think that hanging out as a group and interacting in person, I think is the big draw for that. So I think that's really cool that you're going to foster that a little bit more for this next one.
Yeah, I get a lot of people who are like, we drive too much. So this time I'm going to try to really eliminate the driving as much as possible. Mm. And because you went to Seattle and you know, I'm like, hey, let's drive 3 hours north. And people are like, why are we doing this? So it's like, none of that. We're going to try to choose a location that's like at the most an hour into the forest or walk out to the beach. That's the goal.
Cool. I like that idea. Then, you know, that opens more time for actually taking photos and less time for travel. So that's a good idea.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I guess finally I'll wrap up with just, what do you have in store for toyphotographers.com, the blog, the community? Where do you kind of see it evolving in the future? What is kind of your upcoming vision for everything? Do you have ideas? Are you just kind of going with the flow? What's in store?
Man, I wish I had a vision. My life would be so much better if I had a vision. So for the blog, I think we're going to be going through some growing pains in the next few months because they have a couple writers who are dropping off, which is going to leave room for new writers to come in. So I'm looking at what that's going to look like. And Brett and I need to have a good talk and decide what to do. We're moving forward with our end of the year book, which I'm pretty excited about, which is a book where we're featuring all the photos, one or two photos from all of the people who have contributed to the blog throughout the year as a fundraiser. And because I think it's important that people realize that we're all doing this for free, and it would be nice if we could like at least pay for our hosting costs. So that's the goal, is to see if we can get our hosting costs for 2018 paid for through this sort of celebration of a year in blogging and the photos that were shared on the platform. I'm super excited by this podcast and where that might lead and where that could go. And it's such an awesome contest this last month in the community of just inexpensive toys. Mm-hmm. It was the photo had to feature a toy that was less than a dollar. And it was amazing the creativity that people got into with their toys. And it's just to really help people understand they don't have to have the biggest, fanciest toy to take a good photo. And the same with your cameras. You don't have to have a big, fancy DSLR and $1,000 lens to take a good toy photo. There's more to photography than your equipment or your subject. And just to help foster people that the creativity is not about your toys. It's about what you're expressing and the stories that you're trying to tell, and talk more about that. So I don't know, just more of the same. Oh, it's really boring.
Maybe boring for you, but I find it super exciting. And I, for one, am really glad that I get to be a part of it. And thank you again for helping me not only get involved, but grow in the community and be able to do things like this podcast or do reviews and write for the blog. You know, as one of the people in charge of the community, I'd say you're doing a really awesome job. So thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, James, you're just so sweet. I don't know. I love toy photography. What can I say? I think it's important that people remember it's okay to play at any age. And it's important. It's so therapeutic. And life is a little hectic and can be a little overwhelming at times. And it's nice to have this little respite from it. And that's what I want to keep having and supporting, is the respite from the world.
Where can people find you online? What's your website, Instagram handle?
I'm trying to keep it consistent across platforms. So I think I've moved everything to Shelley Corbett Photography across all the platforms except for Twitter. And then you can find more examples of the work at sjcorbett.com.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at @ToyPhotographers_. Music for this week's episode is by Lee Rosevere and Poddington Bear, courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. And finally, you can reach out to us with comments, concerns, recommendations, etc. at toyphotographypod@gmail.com. I'm James Garcia. You can find my work every single week at toyphotographers.com, as well as on Twitter, @TheRealJames, real spelled R-E-E-L, on Instagram, @TheRealJames23, and on my website, TheRealJames.com. Thanks for listening. I'll see you guys next time.